The Blind Californian, quarterly magazine of the California Council of the Blind, winter 2014, volume 58, number 1, published in Braille, large print, cassette, email, bc-subscribe@ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Recorded by the volunteers of the Northern California Studio of Learning Ally, formerly recording for the blind and dyslexic. Donna Pomerantz, President, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036, phone 626-844-4388, donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 1303 J Street, Suite 400, Sacramento, California, 95814-2900. Phones 800-221-6359, toll-free, 916-441-2100, voice, 916-441-2188, fax, email, ccotb@ccbnet.org, website, ccbnet.org. San Francisco Bay Area Office, Catherine Skivers, 836 Risota Street, Hayward, California, 94545-2120, phone 510-357-1986, cathie.skivers@ccbnet.org. Los Angeles Area Office, Donna Pomerantz, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036, 626-844-4388, donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Jeff Tom, Director, Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, phone 800-221-6359, toll-free, 916-995-3967, cell, and governmentalaffairs, governmentalaffairs@ccbnet.org. The webmaster at webmaster@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, 1550 Bancroft Avenue, number 113, San Leandro, California, 94577-5264, phone 510-357-1844, or editor@ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided by phone in English and Spanish at 800-221-6359, Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription, send a blank message to connection-subscribe@ccbnet.org or on the web at ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to ca.connection@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested, and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language, quote, I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a nonprofit charitable organization in California, the sum of blank dollars or other, to be used for its worthy purposes on behalf of blind persons, end quote. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you. In accepting material for The Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is under 3 pages or 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the spring 2014 issue of The Blind Californian is noon, February 15, 2014. Please send all address changes to the Executive Office. Table of Contents. From the Editor's Desk, Support Statewide Affiliates by Judy Wilkinson, page 2. Moving Forward Toward Our 80th Birthday by Donna Pomerantz, page 8. California Council of the Blind Conference Convention Report, Fall 2013, by Teddy Joy Remhilt, page 12. 2013 Fall CCB Conference and Convention Resolution Summary by Jeff Tom, Resolutions Committee Chair, page 16. Who can provide what health services? Developments in a Changing Landscape, part 2, by Stephen Mendelson, page 20. How to elect a board of directors, which will best work for your chapter or special interest affiliate, by Artis Bazin, CCB Membership Chair, page 27. Awards Anyone? By Roger Peterson, Awards Committee Chair, page 30. Founding of the California Council of the Blind? By Catherine Skivers, page 32. Sierra Regional Ski for Light? By Betsy Rowell, page 41. 2013 Governmental Affairs Report by Jeff Tom, Governmental Affairs Committee Chair, page 43. CCB Board Minute Summaries by Gabe Griffith, CCB Secretary, page 47. California Council of the Blind 2014 Officers and Board, page 54. Page 2 from the Editor's Desk, Support Statewide Affiliates, Judy Wilkinson. Several articles in this issue deal with membership. Donna discusses it in hers, as do Artis and Teddy Joy in theirs. This past year, I've been privileged to be associated with three statewide special interest affiliates, California Library Users and Orientation Center alumni as president, and Guide Dog Users of California as board liaison, and now member. I am a proud member of Braille Revival League of California, and I hereby put the Association of Multicultural Concerns on alert that I will definitely join that affiliate for 2014. I'm not suggesting that you need to be connected with five statewide affiliates as I choose to, but I'd encourage you to think about joining at least one. For some of you, that means belonging to more than one chapter, your home chapter as well as a statewide affiliate. Some of you may wish to join a special interest affiliate as your primary connection to the council. While some concern fairly specific interests, guide dog users, citizens with low vision, braille users, students, OCB alumni, all of us are library users, and I hope all of us are interested in multicultural concerns. Page 3. Even affiliates with seeming specialized connections can always use friends and supporters. Below, I'm pleased to present to you a few words from a representative of each of the seven statewide affiliates. Lillian Scaife, President, AMC. The Association for Multicultural Concerns, AMC, would like to cordially invite you to join us. Below is our basic mission statement, as written within our Constitution. The AMC will endeavor in earnest to promote understanding and respect of diversity through the association and celebration of cultural diversity and inclusion. The AMC will provide a forum whereby the issues and concerns of blind and visually impaired persons of all cultures can be recognized and advanced. If you would like to join, please send a check payable to AMC. To AMC, care of Andrew Kohlmeyer, Treasurer, 2310-A, Gates Avenue, Redondo Beach, California, 90278, AMC_CCB@Verizon.net. Stephen Fort, President, BRLC. Hello, one and all. The purpose of BRLC is to promote the production, teaching, and use of Braille as a primary medium of literacy for all blind people who are physically and mentally able to make practical use of it. Page 4. We meet annually at CCB conferences and conventions. Membership dues are $20 a year. BRLC Treasurer John Ross may be contacted at 3508 Jade, J-A-D-E Avenue, Bakersfield, California, 93306. Email john1973@sbcglobal.net. Make checks payable to BRLC. BRLC is California's affiliate of BRL, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. Lena Dawes, President, CCBS. The California Council of Blind Students consists of students of all ages. Students are considered high schoolers, college students, training center attendees, and students attending any kind of non-traditional schools. That being said, anyone is welcome, and we have had teachers, DOR counselors, and many others as part of our membership. We advocate for equal access for blind students in the classroom. We have social events where students can network, and we have informative programs for conventions. We're currently working on reopening up our board meetings and getting our members involved in CCBS again. Should anyone wish to join us, our dues are $15, with $5 of that going to the American Council of Blind Students. Please send dues to the CCB office. Attention, California Council of Blind Students. Page 5. Thank you, and we hope you will join us. Bernice Kandarian, President, CCCLV, California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Traditionally, education and rehabilitation for the blind has emphasized non-visual methods, those that require no vision, but it is estimated that at least 80% of the blind have useful vision, which they typically want to use. Thus, the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, CCLVI, and its California affiliate, CCCLV, were established in 1987 to advocate an approach to living with low vision that involves the use of whatever vision the individual has, supplemented where necessary by non-visual techniques. We advocate in such areas as large print, lighting, and magnifiers, both optical and electronic, as well as changes in the built environment, such as striping on stairs. To join CCCLV, send a check for $15 payable to CCCLV to CCCLV Treasurer Donna Sanchez, 27 Quail Hollow Drive, San Jose, California, 95128. dsanchez99@att.net. Judy Wilkinson, President, CLUA. I'll never forget the day I read a book. That is our membership slogan for the foreseeable future. An affiliate of the ACB Library Users of America, we take interest in any and all aspects of library and reading issues of concern to persons who are blind, partially sighted, or otherwise print disabled. Page 6. Currently, we have around 40 members. We hope everyone who is interested in reading will join us in efforts to grow our treasury. We will be holding a crafts fair and raffle at the spring convention. We will also be holding at least 2 telephonic membership meetings before then. Dues of $20 per year, checks payable to CLUA, can be sent to our treasurer, Gloria Broderick, 613 East Orange Grove Boulevard, No. 2, Pasadena, California, 91104, phone 626-583-9560, email glorybe@pmpmail.com. Lynn Coates, Board Member, GDUC. GDUC, Bouncing with Enthusiasm. My name is Lynn Coates, and I am one of the directors for Guide Dog Users of California, GDUC. Our organization has recently passed through a period of challenges. However, all of us in GDUC have come out of that rough time with lessons learned and a positive attitude to help us move forward. We would like to invite you to join us. GDUC is widely recognized among the three guide dog training schools in California, as well as the State Guide Dog Board, for providing advocacy and information to guide dog handlers across the state. Page 7. By joining GDUC, you will be a part of this affiliate and help us build this affiliate to what it once was. By joining GDUC, you can serve on one of our various committees, dealing with everything from advocacy to legislation to program planning, outreach, and more. Even if you don't have a guide dog, we welcome you to join us. We will be holding membership meeting conference calls throughout the year. So won't you join us and bounce along with our enthusiasm like Kong's? For further information or to join GDUC, please contact Vita Zavoli, GDUC Treasurer, by email at gducboard@gmail.com, phone 510-846-4080, mailing address, Guide Dog Users of California, care of Vita Zavoli, Zavoli, 1271 Washington Avenue, number 144, San Leandro, California, 94577. Judy Wilkinson, President, OCBA. The Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni have a strong, loyal membership core who know how the Orientation Center for the Blind changed their lives and is still changing lives. We share with each other about our own OCB experiences and stay in touch with today's center. Rosa Gomez, OCB's current administrator, assures us she will be with us at our meeting at the spring convention in Sacramento. You don't have to be an OCB alum to join us. We're proud to have our CCB president as a member. Grad or friend, send a check for $10 payable to OCBA to our new treasurer, Donna Sanchez, 27 Quail Hollow Drive, San Jose, California, 95128-4528, phone 408-377-8311, email dsanchez99@att.net. All these affiliates plead with you to send dues as early as you can so you can be counted on the official roster, which all chapters and affiliates must submit to the CCB office by February 15, 2014. When these special interest affiliates advocate for us, their numbers often speak louder than words. For instance, CCCCLV speaks very loudly when it can point to some 90-plus members. I realize that we all have lots of requests for our money, but the CCB offers a wonderful array of statewide choices. Not only can you become informed about specialized topics and make new friends, but you can be represented when power is counted in numbers. Page 8. Moving forward toward our 80th birthday, Donna Pomerantz. As we move closer to 2014, a number of things come to mind in my reflections. Our CCB is turning 80, and that in itself is a tremendous milestone. It is my hope that we will see many of you at our celebration during the spring conference and convention. The dates are April 10 through 13 at the Sacramento Arden West Hilton Hotel, 2200 Harvard Street, Sacramento, California, 95815. You can make your room reservations by calling 916-922-4700. Ask for the CCB group room rate of $95, including taxes and fees, single or double occupancy. Page 9. We have a number of surprises in store for everyone. Some new activities will take place, and I think you'll be pleased. I have received some very positive feedback on the President's Dinner. All enjoyed having that as a candidates' forum, and that practice will continue. Stay tuned for more information by listening to or reading the California Connection on a weekly basis. We had another first at this past fall convention. We had a virtual brainstorming session on the president's list and came up with some convention themes, which I put out on the list and the connection. All of us chose the theme together by a majority vote. Let's Do It Again, beginning in January. Our CCB has been very active on the advocacy front. Our voting rights case demands that members of our community have exactly the same right to vote privately and independently as our sighted peers using accessible voting machines that must be operational. Page 10. We are doing great work on access to prescription drug labeling. We continue to advocate legislatively for access to educational materials, and we're working tirelessly for full and equal access to point-of-sale machines and those ever-present kiosks. The list goes on and on. Our CCB has been very busy this past year, and that means each of us has been busy on the advocacy front, whether in our local communities or on the statewide level, and yes, on the national level as well. We've gone through some struggles this past year as well. However, we're showing our resilience, demonstrated by the fact that several of our chapters, statewide affiliates, are moving forward and working on recruiting new members, as well as reaching out to those whom they've not seen for a while. I'm looking forward to experiencing what 2014 will bring in our grassroots efforts, everyone working together in the trenches on advocacy and strengthening the bond we have in our cause and diversity. The year 2013 ends with our publications committee asking for your input on our Blind Californian through a survey you must participate in. Our Technical Operations Group, TOG, also asked for your input through a survey on the direction and tools you wish to see on our web environment. Page 11. Our Scholarship Committee is implementing new tools to facilitate choosing students to be awarded CCB scholarships to further the education of those who will advocate after us. One of our new board members is putting out the call for those interested in supporting issues important to us as women. Three of our regions are working on proposals for MUTSTRUT 2014, as each region did a great job growing friends in their local communities. We are beginning planning leadership training at our spring conference and convention, and the list goes on and on. In closing this President's message for 2013, I am so looking forward to celebrating our 80th year of life. I will be stepping down as your president due to health concerns. This is so difficult for me because I have chosen to give my all to our CCB. But as those who love me keep reminding me, it is time to put me first for a change at this new crossroads in my life. I thank each and every one of you for your support. Since I made this announcement at our Saturday General Session during our conference and convention, I really don't like to put myself out there in this way, but in my heart, I needed to let you know what is happening with me so that you will have the time to think of and make the best choice for your newly elected president, who will begin serving their term during our 80th year of advocacy. Page 12, I know you will elect wisely, and yes, there will once again be a candidates page on the CCB website so all can vote from a base of knowledge. To each of you, have a wonderful holiday season, and remember to tell those who are dear to you that you love and care for them. I count myself very fortunate that I will be able to celebrate my father's 80th birthday with my family this year. And I will enjoy spending time with those I love and care about, as I wish for all of you as well. Thank you for allowing me to be your president for these two terms of service. Please continue reaching out to me or your board members and let us know what you wish for your CCB and what you wish to do to help make it happen. California Council of the Blind Conference Convention Report, Fall 2013, Teddy Joy Remhild. Editor's Note: This convention report brings the senior perspective and so much more. Fine writer that she is, Teddy Joy made writing an introduction to her convention report easy. She says, "You may not know this, but I am currently writing my memoir and have been writing for most of my life. Check out both the November and December Braille forums. page 13. My November article is entitled Traveling Blind, and December's is Creative Aging. It ain't over until it's over. I also have a website with much of my poetry and other writings, which can be accessed at the website disabilityandagingadvocacy.com. The October 17 to 20 Fall Convention of the California Council of the Blind was held at the Marriott Hotel Del Mar in San Diego, California. This convention marked the last year that CCB will be holding two conventions a year. A constitutional amendment was passed establishing this change, and beginning in 2014, CCB will be holding only one convention per year. That convention will take place in Sacramento, April 10 to 13, 2014. The Marriott Del Mar, our host hotel, was well prepared with both helpful staff and available volunteers for council members' needs. Most attendees arrived on Thursday, October 17, via Amtrak or local transportation and shuttles via the San Diego airport. It was a pleasant Amtrak ride down for me from L.A., and a free hotel shuttle was provided for both arrival and departure. Page 14. The CCB Board of Directors met Thursday evening, and although I was unable to attend, I understand that they passed a motion to establish a document of agreement which all current and future board members will be required to sign. This agreement details the amount of time required for each officer and board member to contribute in volunteer hours each week. Most of the board agenda is also discussed in general sessions of the convention, including the results of the Mutt Strutt fundraiser held in September in Sacramento, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. All monies donated and committed are not yet in receipt, therefore final figures are still unavailable. If all such donations committed are collected, it is estimated that this fundraiser will break even this year. This is the third year of conducting this event. It is considered a progressive improvement by Treasurer Peter Pardini. As a 22-year member of the CCB, having served as both a board member and second vice president and founding committee chairperson of the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee, my primary commitment at this convention was serving as delegate for my local Glendale Burbank chapter. In this capacity, I attended all general sessions, Friday evening's general session scheduled board and officer elections. Most slate nominations were passed by acclamation, including Roger Peterson as second vice president. Page 15. The contested elections were secretary, with Judy Wilkinson and Artis Bazin in competition. It was close, but Judy Wilkinson won, and in addition to her other commitments of CLUA president, blind Californian editor, she will now serve as CCB board secretary. Artis Bazin will continue to serve as a board member. The other contested board position was sought by Charles Navarrete and Vita Zavoli. Vita Zavoli won that election. Friday morning, a program was presented by the Association on Multicultural Concerns, AMC, which was quite informative and stimulating. There were two speakers, followed by a luncheon, with Charles Navarrete as speaker. The morning session presented a program coordinated from Weight Watchers, Inc., who conducted a lively, entertaining, and motivating program on how easy and accessible Weight Watchers is for blind and visually impaired individuals. AMC President Lillian Scaife is a Weight Watchers member. As president and founding member, Lillian has provided, along with her board, many years of diverse and informative program topics. That program was followed by an employment coordinator from Junior Blind of America who talked about a new employment training opportunity as a call center representative. Page 16, Saturday morning, the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee, chaired by newly appointed Committee Chair Vicki Parker, offered a program focused on both physical and mental fitness entitled Creative Aging, Thinking, Doing, and Revitalizing. It was an impressively attended session, which was conducted by Chair Vicki Parker and Assistant Speaker Teddy Joy Remhild. The program, lasting for 2.5 hours, offered latest research into brain function, nutrition, and physical fitness. Prizes were also given for trivia game winners and puzzle solvers. Vicki Parker, committee chairperson, is a licensed marriage and family therapist employed by Center for the Partially Sighted and also in private practice. In summary, this final fall convention offered something of interest for all members. Technology, internet games, and access workshops, along with an exhibit room and other affiliates meetings such as CLUA, BRLC, RSVA, and GDUC, kept us all well informed and quite happily thinking, doing, and revitalizing. See you in April 2014. 2013 Fall CCB Conference and Convention Resolution Summary, Jeff Tom, Resolutions Committee Chair. The following 7 resolutions were adopted at the Fall 2013 California Council of the Blind Conference and Convention. Page 17. Resolution 2013-B1 commended the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind for its 65-year history of ensuring the highest quality of instruction by the 3 guide dog schools in California and for its recent decision to amend its regulations to require schools to obtain written authorization prior to the release of personal contact information or the image of students in training or videos submitted to the board. The resolution also urges the board to further amend its regulations and or seek legislation to do the following. 1. Permit the provision of follow-up services by instructors for periods of no more than 2 weeks at a time to guide dog handlers who receive training from schools outside the state which have current certification by the International Guide Dog Federation. 2. Require the production and dissemination through the 3 guide dog schools in California and on the board's website of a fact sheet describing the board's arbitration authority, its role in assisting handlers who are victims of alleged guide dog discrimination, and the purpose for the board itself. 3. Require that a fixed percentage, at least 1/3 of the members of the board, be current guide dog handlers. Page 18, finally, the resolution provided that if the board appears to be unwilling to support the above recommendations, CCB gives serious consideration to withdrawing its long-standing support for the board when it is next considered for legislative sunsetting in 2017. Resolution 2013-B2 required that CCB seek reintroduction and passage of Assembly Bill 238 of the 2007-08 regular session, which would include prescribed reader services within those services provided under the In-Home Supportive Services, or IHSS, program. Resolution 2013-B3 requests the legislature to examine the issue of whether the state procurement monitoring and oversight functions of the Department of General Services, DGS, along with the associated percentage of procurement funds transferred to DGS, should, in the case of the Department of Rehabilitation, be limited or eliminated. Resolution 2013-B4 thanks and commends each and every volunteer at the Fall 2013 Conference and Convention of the California Council of the Blind. Resolution 2013-B5 requires that this organization advocate with the legislature, the governor, and the Department of Rehabilitation in order to reverse the long-standing failure of the state to identify, pursue, and develop new BEP locations, as well as to vigorously strive to retain existing locations. Page 19. Resolution 2013-B6 affirmed that since its inception, the statewide affiliate for Guide Dog Handlers has continuously operated under the name of Guide Dog Users of California, or GDUC. The resolution further provided that the organization that has applied for registration as Guide Dog Users of California with the Office of the California Secretary of State on September 11, 2013, is not and never was the CCB statewide affiliate bearing that name, and required a letter accompanied by a copy of this resolution be sent via certified mail to the applicant at 6043 Ralston Avenue, Richmond, California, 94805, and to the agent for service, LegalZoom.com, demanding that the organization, filing the registration with the California Secretary of State on September 11, 2013, for incorporation of Guide Dog Users of California, Inc., immediately withdraw this unauthorized filing or relinquish control of the resulting corporation to the Board of Directors of the duly authorized CCB statewide affiliate, to which the name of Guide Dog Users of California has always been associated. The resolution provided that if this filing is withdrawn or the corporate entity relinquished, the individuals who made this filing be encouraged to join in the revitalization of GDUC, but required that if the individuals associated with this application fail to comply with CCB's demands within 10 calendar days of the receipt of the letter sent pursuant to this resolution. Page 20. 1. Copies of this resolution be sent to specified officials and organizations in order to make them aware of this situation, and 2. The CCB Board of Directors, in consultation with GDUC, consider what other actions are available and appropriate to bring about a satisfactory resolution to this situation. Resolution 2013-B7 extended the organization's profound appreciation to the hotel staff of the San Diego Del Mar Hotel for their outstanding work. Who can provide what health services? Developments in a Changing Landscape, Part 2, Stephen Mendelson. Editor's note. Our household is batting 500. My own fall editorial raised quite a controversy, but the first part of Steve's article got rave reviews, so without further ado, we end the suspense. Page 21. So, what did the Supreme Court decide? In summary, it decided that where parents requested and the child's treating physician authorized insulin administration by school personnel, the actions of those personnel came under the physician-directed exception provisions of the Education Code and therefore were lawful. So far as the unauthorized practice of nursing claim was concerned, the court concluded that the NPA concerned itself here not with any particular action or treatment, such as administering insulin, but with whether unlicensed persons held themselves out as or claimed to be nurses. That was not the issue here because the school personnel in question made no such claim. In the court's view, the authorizing statute, Section 49423 of the Education Code, was clear, so there was no need to reach the nurses' other contentions, such as that in adopting the legal advisory, the Department of Education had exceeded its statutory authority. If the statute had been unclear, then the issue might have shifted to whether an agency like the Department of Education had the authority under the law to adopt this sort of regulation, whether such legislative power had been delegated to it. But since the authority for the injections came directly from the statute, the regulation's validity and indeed the subsidiary question of whether the legal advisory constituted an official regulation at all dropped out of the case. Page 22. The court's decision eliminated another issue from the case as well. The supporters of non-nurse insulin injection had argued that even if state law did not permit non-nurses to administer insulin, Federal civil rights and education laws did. They argued that such laws should preempt, that is, take precedence over the state law. If the court had interpreted state law as not allowing the insulin administration, then the court would have had to go on to consider this preemption issue. Since the decision on preemption would have involved interpretation of federal law, the likelihood is that whichever side lost would have appealed to the federal courts. But since the court reached its decision solely on the basis of its interpretation and application of state law, and since there is no appeal from a state's high court on an interpretation of state law, the case is finally over. Possibly, if the court had ruled against the insulin administration, but then gone on to hold that preemption was not applicable, the pro-injection group might still have tried to go back into federal court on the preemption issue. But fortunately, this was not necessary. Page 23. Now that we have followed the labyrinthian course of this important case, the question of its implications emerges as key. As important as the decision is for the estimated 14,000 California public school students with diabetes, its ultimate significance, like that of almost all major court decisions, will ultimately be knowable only over time as other courts rely on it, reject it, or ignore it in considering the issues noted above, as legislatures address cost and practice issues surrounding a variety of treatments and services, and as public and private insurers update their reimbursement policies as to who can be compensated for providing what services and in what settings. Naturally, consideration of the ruling's implications must begin with the text of the decision itself. Accordingly, it is important to make clear that the state Supreme Court did not offer a blanket endorsement of the right of non-medical school personnel to administer injections. In distinguishing insulin from other medications, the court noted a number of statutes restricting the administration of certain controlled substances and emergency medications in schools, and specifying the specialized training that would be required of personnel who are allowed to administer these drugs. Page 24. But in the absence of any provision of law expressly controlling or limiting the administration of a medication or drug to students, the court is probably telling us that where there is parental approval and physician direction, and especially where the physician or parents have identified the personnel in question, the law will allow non-nursing, non-healthcare school personnel to administer the necessary medications. But where any statute requires a different result for a particular drug or class of drugs, the terms of that statute will, as they should, control. But nowhere will lay personnel be permitted to hold themselves out or assume the role of nurses or of other health care practitioners, as long as who they are and who they are not is clear, what they do is the issue on which the law will focus. Still, there's little consistency among statutes in terms of which services require nurses, doctors, or other licensed health care providers to perform them and which do not, as well as to where and when. The decision points away to a case-by-case, situation-by-situation process and gives little overall guidance. What the decision should prompt is a thoroughgoing legislative review of all such requirements to create more general rules. Page 25, that review should begin with the question of which procedures or treatments are of such a nature as to be safely or appropriately administered only by a designated health care practitioner, and of course by what kind or range of practitioners. Probably any injection that can safely be self-administered should be appropriate for administration by a layperson as well, but of course there will always be types of medications, such as controlled substances, emergency antidotes, drugs likely to provoke dangerous or unpredictable reactions, or others that no one would want to be administered by non-professional personnel. To say that certain injectables can legally be administered by laypersons is not, of course, to say that they can be administered by anyone at any time. The legislative review must also, therefore, consider the training and supervision that will be required. But as a recent debate over expansion of nurse practice illustrates, these questions of supervision, in this case by doctors, inevitably become part of the jurisdictional dispute. And since lay people have no professional organizations, trade associations, or lobbyists to advocate for them, they are likely to lose out, even against cost savings arguments, in cases where the practice rights and income streams of various health care disciplines are in any way challenged. Page 26. Still, in the end, the payers hold the whip hand. If, as they are increasingly likely to do, that is, insurance companies, including Medicare, Medicaid, and private managed care providers, decide that reducing costs is their primary imperative, they have means of substituting lower for higher paid personnel in the delivery of all manner of services, no matter what legislatures say. Mostly, these cost-saving measures are likely to involve substitution with or without on-site or other direct physician supervision of lower-paid for higher-paid healthcare professionals, but in some cases they're likely to go farther, especially in home and long-term care settings, where administration of medication by lay employees, whether legal or not, is reputedly already quite common. Consumers face this prospect warily, because while it does bode some reduction of cost and some broadened access to needed services, it also raises questions of quality and accountability. On balance, consumer choice should be encouraged, but that choice must be informed choice as to the implications of the modality, as to the alternatives, and as to the skill and experience of the provider, whether possessed of a professional credential or not. These are not new issues for people who supplement their conventional health care, or LTSS, long-term services and supports, through recourse to alternative medicine of one kind or another. It will certainly become an issue for many more people in the turbulent health and LTSS era to come. Page 27. How to elect a board of directors which will best work for your chapter or special interest affiliate. Artis Bazin, CCB, Membership Chair. At our recent California convention, our CCB membership committee sponsored a breakfast seminar on this topic. Members attending discussed how can we get the best persons for chapter and affiliate board positions. We developed the following list of recommendations. Have candidates write a statement saying why they would be best for the job. Outline job responsibilities before asking possible candidates to give statements. The nominating committee chooses a slate based on how each available member could handle each position. Allow time during voting meeting or prior month to give a summary of their abilities. Ask candidates to answer questions for either a candidate's page or to read prior to the voting meeting. Page 28. Have a candidate's forum a month ahead to state position. Provide materials to other chapter members about statements. Provide training for members who have not served previously but are willing to learn. One concern expressed was what can a chapter do if capable people are not willing or not available to run. It may be difficult at times to know if a member would be able to handle a particular position. If a member who had handled a position earlier could assist them as a mentor, newer members might offer to run. Other officers could switch parts of the job if an aspect of the position is of concern. Sometimes members aren't aware of responsibilities and would be more likely to volunteer if a mentor agreed to work with them. A co-president, co-secretary, co-treasurer position might work. Also, you could eliminate an unnecessary position like second vice president if a smaller chapter doesn't have the necessary persons to fill the positions. Positions can be combined so fewer positions are needed, such as secretary-treasurer. A change of your constitution might be needed to make these alterations. CCB Membership Awards. Win one of the CCB Membership Incentive Awards in 2014. Page 29. These awards are presented at every CCB convention to the CCB chapters or affiliates having the highest membership increase between the previous and current conventions. One award is for the highest number of members increased, and the second award is for the largest percentage increase in membership. We encourage all chapters and affiliates to work on building their membership count. Is your chapter currently working on a project that will benefit your community? The Chapter of the Year Award is presented by the CCB Membership Committee at each spring CCB convention. This award is presented to the CCB chapter that conducts a group effort to make a significant difference in the life of an individual and or the community. The Chapter of the Year Award is given to the chapter with the best overall chapter project for the previous year. We will be accepting letters from chapters for projects developed and completed in 2013. Please submit letters to the CCB State Office by February 15, 2014. In the letter, please explain the group chapter project, who benefited from the effort, and the timeline of the project. We would like to be able to present this award in 2014, provided we receive letters from chapters. We have not had nominations for this award for several years now. Let's make 2014 different. Page 30. If you have questions about membership, feel free to contact the CCB Membership Committee, Artis Basin Chair and David Jackson Vice Chair, future ACB Membership Focus Calls. The next ACB Membership Focus Call will be held on Sunday, January 26 at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. The topic will be creative ways to meet, especially in rural areas. The April Membership Focus Call will be held on Monday, April 21, at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. The topic will be, what leadership training has your affiliate provided to members? Awards, anyone? Roger Peterson, Awards Committee Chair. CCB presents several awards to deserving individuals and groups at our annual conference and convention, and it is time for us to start preparing for these presentations. Some are presented by the Awards Committee and some are given by others. Besides the committee's awards, the publications and membership committees give awards. The membership committees are described in the membership article in this issue. Page 31. The Publications Committee presents writing awards, usually based on articles written for the BC and chosen by the committee. The only part the general membership might play in this process would be to recommend an article for consideration that appeared in some other publication. You do, however, have a part to play in the presentation of awards by the Awards Committee. We need you to submit letters to the CCB office nominating people for these awards, so we will be presenting them to the most deserving people possible. These letters are due by February 15, 2014. Here are the awards and their criteria. The CCB Hall of Fame. Up to 5 persons per year who've made significant contributions and sustained effort to advance the goals of CCB over a period of years may be nominated. The CCB Community Service Award, presented annually to a blind or visually impaired individual who, through his or her association and activities, has demonstrated integration into and interaction with the life of the community. The CCB Distinguished Service Award, given periodically to an outstanding blind or visually impaired person who has contributed significantly to the betterment of blind people in general. The recipient of this award need not be a member of CCB. Page 32, the CCB Legislator of the Year Award, bestowed periodically on a state or federal legislator who has introduced and successfully directed enactment of legislation on behalf of persons who are blind or visually impaired. The Humanitarian Award, granted to an individual or organization that has assisted blind people in general, or CCB and its affiliates in particular, to an extraordinary degree. The recipient may be blind or sighted. The CCB Merit Award, formerly the Certificate of Merit, given to any individual who provides outstanding volunteer service to CCB, its chapters, or affiliates. In closing, let me thank the members of the Awards Committee who have made the difficult decisions we must make, Susan Hyatt, Mary Beth Randall, and Michael Williams. Founding of the California Council of the Blind, Catherine Skivers. Editor's note, as we begin our 80th year as the California Council of the Blind, what could be more fitting than a series of articles by Kathy Skivers? Throughout this anniversary year, as space permits, we will be seeing more of her all-important historic perspective. Page 33. On October 6, 1934, a group of 29 persons met in Fresno to consider the formation of a California Council for the Blind. The plan for such an organization originated with Mrs. Kathleen Michael, then chief of the Division for the Blind in the State Department of Social Welfare. Her plan was to form a group in which the sighted members would predominate, but the blind would have some representation. Of the 29 persons present, 16 were blind and 13 sighted. The blind members had come at the insistence of Dr. Newell Perry, director of advanced studies at the California School for the Blind, and himself the blind leader of the blind at that time. The blind persons represented various organizations of the blind up and down the state, which Dr. Perry had been organizing during the previous 10 years. Most of the sighted persons present were engaged in work for the blind in the state and had held several preliminary meetings among themselves to discuss the formation of a council. It was the late Professor Jacobus Tenbrick, one of Dr. Perry's boys, who masterminded and battled through the substitution of the adopted Article 1, Section 1 of the bylaws of the newly formed organization, and which gave the blind the majority on the original council by adding representatives of two additional organizations of the blind to the roster. Page 34. This majority led to the election of Dr. Perry as the first president, a post which he held until his retirement from the position in 1953. Following are the minutes of that historic organizational meeting. A meeting of the group interested in the welfare of the blind was held in the Jade Room of the Hotel Fresno at Fresno on Saturday, October 6, 1934. The meeting was called to order by the chairman, Mrs. Kathleen Michael, at 10:15 a.m. The following persons were present: Mrs. Kathleen Michael, chief of the Division for the Blind; Mrs. J.R. Lewerton, blind representative of the Long Beach area; Mr. H.D. Hicker, chief of the Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation; Mr. J.R. Atkinson, founder and director of the Braille Institute of America, Los Angeles, with Mrs. Atkinson; Miss Annette Williams, blind representative of the Oakland area; Mr. Reginald White, blind representative of the San Luis Obispo area; Dr. Newell Perry, director of advanced studies, California School for the Blind; Miss Dorothy Glass, blind representative of the Mountain area; Mr. Joseph M. Kelly, superintendent of the State Industrial Home for the Adult Blind, Oakland, with Mrs. Kelly; Dr. Thomas F. Madden, Fresno physician, representing the Lions Clubs; Mr. J. Tenbrick, blind college student at Berkeley. Page 35. Dr. W. R. Groeschel, blind osteopath, representing the blind of the Los Angeles area; Mr. Franklin Dean, blind representative of the American Brotherhood for the Blind, Los Angeles; Mr. Stanley Vosper, blind representative from the Long Beach area; Mr. H. O. Porter, blind representative from the Los Angeles area; Miss Gladys Conley, secretary to Mrs. Michael; Mrs. Mary Carroll, home teacher of the Adult Blind, Oakland; Mr. Perry Sundquist, partially blind representative from the Los Angeles area; Mr. Alfred Kluss, blind teacher in the Los Angeles City Schools; Mr. Orville Brenner, blind representative from the Long Beach area; Mr. Henry Bint, blind representative from the Berkeley area; Miss Bernice McCrary, home teacher of the Adult Blind, Oakland; and four representatives from the Fresno Welfare Department. Mrs. Michael gave a short resume of the previous meetings and asked if the members wished to hear the minutes read. The motion carried. The minutes were read and accepted. Mr. White requested the secretary to read again the minutes of the committee meetings and the proposed constitution. The minutes were read and discussion followed. Page 36. Mr. White moved that the constitution be adopted as read. The motion was lost. Mr. Lewerton requested that the Constitution be read again. After some discussion, Miss Glass stated that it would be better to hear it again, also the names proposed for the personnel of the Council. The Constitution and names were read. Mr. Hicker suggested that the proposed members of the Council be seated together in order to make voting easier. Mr. Brint asked how many members were present who were eligible to vote, and would they please... a misprint, identify themselves. After discussion as to the eligibility of the members, Mr. Tenbrick moved, seconded by Dr. Perry, that the names as read be temporarily accepted for the purpose of the adoption of the Constitution. The motion carried. Mr. Lewerton asked if a substitute could be sent in case a representative was unable to attend a meeting. The ruling of the chair was that the question could not be answered until a constitution was adopted. Dr. Groeschel moved, seconded by Mr. Dean, that the articles of the constitution be voted on separately. After much discussion, the constitution was adopted as amended. Page 37. The question then arose as to the personnel of the council. Dr. Perry asked Mr. Sundquist to read the copy of the proposed Article 1, Section 1 of the bylaws, personnel of the charter members of the council. Mr. Blint moved, seconded by Dr. Groeschel, that the article be read. The motion carried. Mr. Sundquist read the article, and discussion followed as to the changes in the personnel. It was explained that the total number was the same, but that two changes had been made, substituting two representatives of the blind for two sighted representatives. Mr. Groeschel moved, seconded by Mr. Lewerton, that Article 1, Section 1 of the bylaws be adopted. The motion carried. Mr. Tenbrick stated that the council was now formed and the secretary was asked to read the representatives on the council, which are as follows. 1. Chief of the Division for the Blind, Department of Social Welfare. 2. Chief of the Rehabilitation Bureau, Department of Education. 3. Principal of the California School for the Blind. 4. Director of Advanced Studies, California School for the Blind. 5. Superintendent of the Industrial Home for the Adult Blind, Department of Institutions. Page 38. 6. Supervising Field Worker, Department of Institution. 7. Manager of the State Workshop for the Blind, Los Angeles, Department of Institutions. 8. Representative of Classes for the Blind, Los Angeles Public Schools. 9. Representative from the State Library, Department of Education. 10. Blind Representative of the Braille Institute of America, Los Angeles. 11. Blind Representative from the American Brotherhood of Free Reading for the Blind, Los Angeles. 12. A blind businesswoman selected by the Executive Committee of the Council. 13. District Governor or Representative of the Lions Clubs. 14. Northern Representative from the California Alumni Association of Self-Supporting Blind. 15. Blind Representative of the Western Seeing Eye Owners Association. 16. Blind Representative of the San Francisco Association for the Blind. 17. Blind Representative of the Alameda County Club of Adult Blind. 18. Blind Representative of the San Francisco County Club of Adult Blind. Page 39. 19. Blind Representative of the East Bay Club of Blind Women. 20. Blind Representative of the San Diego Braille Club. 21. Blind Representative of the Los Angeles County Club of Adult Blind. 22. Blind Representative of the Los Angeles Braille Club. 23. Blind Representative of the Associated Blind of California. 24. Blind Representative of the Long Beach Braille Club. 25. Southern Representative of the California Alumni Association of Self-Supporting Blind. It was moved by Dr. Perry, seconded by Mr. Kelly, that Miss Dorothy Glass be formally accepted as the member of the council designated as a blind businesswoman. Carried unanimously. The meeting adjourned for lunch at 12:30 to reconvene at 2 p.m. The meeting was called to order at 2 p.m. by Mrs. Michael, who stated that the first order of business would be to elect the officers for the new council. Mrs. Michael stated that as chairman, she would appoint a nominating committee. Discussion followed. Page 40. The motion was made by Mr. Tenbrick, seconded by Dr. Groeschel, that each officer be nominated from the floor and that a standing vote be taken. The motion carried. The following officers were elected: Dr. Newell Perry, President; Mrs. Kathleen Michael, First Vice President; Mr. Perry Sundquist, Second Vice President; Mrs. Mary Carroll, Recording Secretary and Treasurer; Mr. J. Robert Atkinson, Corresponding Secretary. Mr. H.D. Hicker, Mr. J. Tenbrick, and Ms. Dorothy Glass were elected to serve on the Executive Committee. The following committees were appointed: Mrs. Kathleen Michael, Chairman of a Committee to Study the Needs of the Non-Custodial Adult Blind; Mr. H.D. Hicker, Chairman of a Committee to Study the Opportunities of Remunerative Employment of the Blind; Mr. J.M. Kelly, Chairman of a Committee to Study the Necessary Essentials for a Good Home for the Adult Blind; Dr. Richard S. French, Chairman of a Committee to Study the Needs, Real Aims, and Essentials for a Good School for Blind Children; Dr. Thomas F. Madden, Chairman of the Committee on the Prevention of Blindness. There will also be a Committee on Publicity and one on Legislation. A resolution was passed, and the secretary was instructed to send a note of thanks to Mr. Clayton Smith for his courtesy and hotel accommodations. A resolution was passed, and the secretary was instructed to send a note of thanks to Mr. Clayton Smith for his courtesy and hotel accommodations. Mr. Atkinson suggested that provision be made for special meetings. Mr. Atkinson moved, seconded by Mr. Sundquist, that Article 1, Section 2 of the bylaws be amended to read, "Special meetings may be held on call of the president at any time on 10 days' written notice." The motion carried. The motion was made by Miss Williams, seconded by Mrs. Michael, at the next council meeting be held on the first Saturday in April 1935 at Bakersfield. Carried. The motion to adjourn was made at 4:15. Respectfully submitted, Mary Carroll, Recording Secretary. Page 41. Sierra Regional Ski for Light, Betsy Rowell. Sierra Regional Ski for Light. The website, srsfl.org, is accepting applications for the 2014 ski season at Tahoe Donner Cross Country in Truckee, California. SRSFL offers guided cross-country skiing and snowshoeing for blind and visually impaired children and adults. Each skier and snowshoer is matched with a trained guide. SRSFL welcomes beginners to advanced skiers. Scholarships are available. Fee includes transportation from Sacramento. Page 42. 2014 ski schedules. Saturday day trips, January 25, sign-up deadline January 18. February 8, sign-up deadline February 1. March 22, sign-up deadline March 15. Cost: trail passes, adult $18, senior 60 to 74 $15, child under 12 $575 and over $5. Ski rental, adult ages 13 to 74 $19, child 12 and under $11. Please contact Betsy Rowell, phone 916-362-5557. Or email betsy.rowell2@gmail.com. 22nd Annual 3-Day Event, Adults Only, Saturday, March 8 through Monday, March 10, 2014. Lodging will be at the Hotel Truckee Tahoe, formerly the Larkspur Hotel, in Truckee, California. Skiing will be at Tahoe Donner Cross Country, Truckee, California. Cost $275 or $218 if you bring equipment. Fee includes 2 nights lodging, double occupancy, 2 breakfasts Sunday and Monday, 2 dinners Saturday and Sunday, trail passes for all 3 days and transportation. We recommend lodging at the Fairfield Inn and Suites in Rancho Cordova Friday night, March 7. The cost is an additional $43 double, $86 single. Please contact Cindy Quintana. Phone 510-483-2948 or email cindyq12345@sbcglobal.net. Page 43, 2013 Governmental Affairs Report. Jeff Tom, Governmental Affairs Committee Chair. I would never go so far as to characterize a year in the state capitol as dull, but this year was certainly less eventful than the past couple of years. And we should all breathe a sigh of relief on that score. Not only was a budget passed on time, but we didn't face any more horrendous cuts like the ones in the prior few years. That's because this state is in the best fiscal shape it has been in for close to a decade. And in my view, we have the governor's leadership to thank for that outcome. By forcing his own party to swallow many cuts on which many of us disagreed, and then by leading the fight to have the voters pass additional funding for education, as well as the beginning of a return to better economic times for our state's economy, it doesn't appear that we will be facing the prospect of red ink at least any time in the near future. In fact, due to outstanding advocacy work from the disability community, including efforts from CCB members, the legislature, and the governor, agreed to increase funding for community college disabled student programs and services. Page 44. Although these increases weren't sufficient to fully restore funding levels to 2008-09 funding level, they will make a substantial difference around the state for programs that have had more individuals to serve and have cut both services and personnel. Dull or not, 2013 still contained many highlights of importance to those of us who are blind or visually impaired. It was quite an eventful year in the area of guide dog-related legislation. Pursuant to SB 308 by Price, the existence of the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind was extended for 4 years through 2017. In addition, the board's authority to act as an arbitrator in disputes between handlers and guide dog schools was also extended for that 4-year period. Finally, AB 1252, a bill that contained a variety of changes to provisions relating to restaurants and other food facilities, redefined service animals for purposes of animals allowed in such facilities as being limited to dogs and only those dogs individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of a person with a disability. For guide dog users that have felt the wrath of business owners due to the use of exotic species of animals or dogs that weren't trained a day in their lives, this bill represents an important victory. Page 45, for those of you who are beneficiaries of both Medi-Cal and Medicare benefits who reside in Los Angeles, Orange, San Diego, Riverside, San Bernardino, San Mateo, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties, beginning in April 2014, you will be required to enroll in managed care for your Medi-Cal benefits, and at your option can include your Medicare benefits in that managed care plan as well. If all goes well, this new program, named CalMediConnect, will provide more integrated and person-centered care, as well as save the federal and state governments money. Advocates, including CCB, will be watching closely, however, to see whether these hopes are actually realized. AB 1003 by Aleo, which was signed into law by the governor, will require data to be collected on members of and appointees to the judiciary who have disabilities. Such data, which is already collected with respect to other groups, can be used to indicate whether persons with disabilities are underrepresented in the judicial branch of government. CCB was pleased to support this bill as a resolution passed in 2012 by our organization actually addressed the need for more appointments to the judiciary of persons with disabilities. AB 133 by Hagman showed the power that our advocacy can have. Page 46. This bill, which was signed by the governor, provides that when materials are proposed to a school district board or the state board of education to be used by the local district or the state, such proposed materials are to be put in digital formats. CCB proposed amendments to require that the digital format be an accessible one for persons who are blind or visually impaired. After some initial opposition, we refused to let the matter drop. Not only did we get our amendments placed in the bill, but we made a friend in the Assembly by supporting the bill's enactment. AB 459 by Mitchell is an attempt to require all foods and beverages in state building vending machines to be healthy. Because of the extremely adverse impact this will have exclusively on vending facility operators who are blind, we have worked to defeat this bill. For now, anyway, it has stalled in the Assembly, but it can be brought up again in January, where it must pass the Assembly by the 30th of that month or it will die. Alternatively, a similar bill could be introduced. We are already making plans for 2014. Pursuant to Resolution 2013-B2, described in the resolution summaries in this issue, we will be seeking to reintroduce legislation authorizing in-home supportive services. IHSS program recipients who are blind, low vision, or otherwise print impaired to have the reading and filling out of documents as part of the services for which they are eligible. Page 47. 5 years ago, we almost got the job done on this issue, and we have strong support in many quarters, so it is time to win a battle that we've been fighting for 20 years. It is impossible to predict from year to year what issues will catch fire. However, one thing is for certain, whether we're fighting to pass new legislation, to win a funding battle concerning the state budget, or to defeat a proposed law that will decrease opportunities for persons who are blind or have low vision, we need the help of each and every one of you to make your legislators listen. So when President Pomerantz or myself or one of your chapter members urges you to get involved in the battle over an issue, please help in any way you can, because you will make a difference. CCB Board Minutes Summaries, Gabe Griffith, CCB Secretary. December 3, 2012, conference call. Roll call, present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Jean Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Treasurer Peter Pardini, immediate past President Jeff Tom, Board Member Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon, David Jackson, Linda Perel, Eric Smiley, Judy Wilkinson, Robert Wendt joined late, and Secretary Gabe Griffith was absent. Page 48, review of fundraising contract. It was decided to accept contracts with two different fundraising groups for the year 2013. Review of Muttstrut regional proposals. There were four regional proposals for the board to discuss. These four regions were Sacramento, San Francisco, San Diego, and Los Angeles. The four regional chairs joined the call separately to discuss their region's proposal. It was decided to give all four regions an extension until January 15 to finish getting their information together. It was also decided to bring on a statewide coordinator by January 2, 2013. The meeting was adjourned at this point. April 11, 2013, pre-convention board meeting, President Donna Pomerantz called the meeting to order at 6:48 p.m. Roll call, present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Jean Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, Treasurer Peter Pardini, immediate past President Jeff Tom, board members Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Jackson, Linda Perel, Eric Smiley, Robert Wendt, and Judy Wilkinson. David Hanlon was absent. Page 49. Agenda. It was decided to approve the agenda with one addition of an item on the strategic plan. Minutes from November and January meetings were approved. Muttstrut. Donna Pomerantz and Jeta Jackson reported on the Muttstrut. Regions having it, brochures, raffle prizes, and more, the board decided to find a way to have Jeta attend the fall convention as she was only able to attend this meeting by phone. Treasurer's Report. Peter discussed several Treasury items, including budget, projected income, actual income, and compared this year's income and expenses to last year's. The report was accepted unanimously. Strategic plan. Donna talked about the upcoming strategic plan, when it would start, who would be conducting it, and outlined the process for completing it. Proposed budget. The board adopted a proposed budget that included a net loss of $108,000. Convention update. Jean talked about some of the work the one convention ad hoc committee has been doing. Page 50. Some of the items discussed included the length of the convention, when the board meeting could be, and where conventions would be held. It was decided that the convention would be held in the first half of the year and would alternate between Northern and Southern California. Event conflicts. It was decided that there would not be any events allowed to be held during general sessions with the exception of the exhibit hall. Publications committee report. Linda Perrell is the new committee chair. She discussed some of what the committee is doing, including putting together a subcommittee for publication of the Blind Californian, publication numbers for the BC, and recommendations for investigating new audio formats for publication of the BC. They are also working on publishing an e-book. It was decided to have the president appoint an ad hoc committee to investigate audio options for the BC. Technical Operations Group Report. Vita Zavoli gave this report. She talked about some of the things that TOG does, including posting convention audio on the website, updating pages on the website, assisting the office with accessibility of new programs and more. They're recommending an upgrade to the platform the website is on and a change to a new hosting location. Page 51, it was decided to accept the TOG's recommendations for moving the web hosting. Newell Perry Trust Fund Report. Jeff read this report. They have only had one withdrawal. The report was accepted. Email vote ratification. It was decided to ratify the email vote taken to purchase new assistive listening devices. Report on Ellen Murphy Trust Fund. They will be making another withdrawal soon, and this will be their fourth withdrawal for assistance this year. It was decided to accept the report. Public comment. There was public comment regarding the one convention a year, the internal loan from the CEA fund, special funds, audio formats for the BC, legislative issues, and credentials. April 22, 2013 conference call. Roll call. Present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Jean Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Immediate Past President Jeff Tom, Board Members Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon, David Jackson, Linda Perrell, Eric Smiley, Robert Wendt, and Judy Wilkinson. This meeting was conducted almost entirely in executive session. It was decided to enter discussions and possible litigation against Alameda County in regards to voting machine accessibility. Page 52. CCB will help to gather stories about this and will write a letter to the California Secretary of State regarding this issue. Outside of executive session, there was a discussion about chapter rosters and the validity of the ones chapters are turning in. The meeting adjourned after this discussion. June 24, 2013, conference call. Roll call. Present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Jean Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Immediate Past President Jeff Tom, Board Members Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon, David Jackson, Linda Perrell, Eric Smiley, Judy Wilkinson. Robert Wendt was absent. Trust Donna announced that Christy Crespin has been appointed to the Ellen Murphy Trust as a trustee by the other trustees on that account. It was also decided to appoint Mitch Pomerantz as a trustee on the Newell Perry Trust Fund. The board then entered executive session to discuss legal matters. It was decided to adopt a resolution suspending Guide Dog Users of California as an affiliate. The meeting exited executive session, and the meeting adjourned after this discussion. Page 53, September 22, 2013, conference call. Roll call present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Gene Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, immediate past President Jeff Tom, board members Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon, David Jackson, Linda Perrell, Eric Smiley, Judy Wilkinson, and Robert Wendt. Treasurer Peter Pardini was absent. Minutes were passed for meetings in December, April, and June. The board then entered executive session. It was decided to sign on to a lawsuit against Alameda County for inaccessibility to voting machines. It was also decided to lift the suspension of the Guide Dog Users of California affiliate. The board left executive session after this discussion. Chapter Charter. The board ratified a charter to the Greater Lakewood Chapter. CCBL discussion list. It was decided to appoint moderators for this email discussion list. Donna will work with the chairs of the publications and TOG committees to appoint moderators. Credential/roster information referrals. Donna reported that there was only one chapter this year who did not get credential information in on time. Muttstrut, it was decided to let the three regions who had Muttstrut events in 2013 put down refundable deposits for 2014. The meeting adjourned at this point. Page 54. California Council of the Blind, 2014, officers and board. Editor's note. We are indebted to Bernice Kandarian, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms begin on July 1 following election. The presence of an asterisk or star means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. President Donna Pomerantz, 12 to 14 second term, Pasadena, California, 91106, home phone 626-844-4388, on the web donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., star 12 to 14 third term, Sacramento, California, 95841, eugene.lozano@ccbnet.org. Second Vice President Roger Peterson, star 13 to 15 second term, Mountain View, California, 94040, home 650-969-1688. And roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Page 55, Secretary Judy Wilkinson, 13 to 15, first term, San Leandro, California, 94577, home 510-357-1844, judy.wilkinson@ccbnet.org. Treasurer Peter Pardini, 12 to 14 second term, Mill Valley, California, 94941, cell 415-990-9202, peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. Immediate past president Jeff Tom, 2011 on, Sacramento, California, 95831, cell 916-995-3967 or jeff.thom@ccbnet.org. Board members, Artis Bazin, star 13 to 15, second term, Burbank, California, 91504, ardis.bazyn@ccbnet.org. Vincent Calderon, star 12 to 14, third term, Montclair, California, 91763, cell 626-429-4539, vince.calderon@ccbnet.org. Lena Dawes, star 12 to 14, second term, Sacramento, California, 95818, cell 916-905-9034, leena.daws@ccbnet.org. David Hanlon, 12 to 14, second term, San Diego, California, 92117, cell 858-610-0825. dave.hanlon@ccbnet.org. David Jackson, 12 to 14, fourth term, San Francisco, California, 94127, home 415-239-1873, david.jackson@ccbnet.org. Linda Perel, 13 to 15, third term, San Francisco, California, 94112, cell 415-577-8437, or linda.perelle@ccbnet.org. Page 56, John Ross, 13 to 15, first term, Bakersfield, California, 93306, cell 661-619-5863, john.ross@ccbnet.org. Robert Wendt, 13 to 15, second term, Long Beach, California, 90814, home 562-438-7100, robert.wendt@ccbnet.org. Vita Zavoli, 13 to 15, first term, San Leandro, California, 94577, vita.zavoli@ccbnet.org. Publication Committee, Linda Perel, Chair, San Francisco, California, 94112, cell 415-577-8437, or linda.perelle@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, San Leandro, California, 94577, home 510-357-1844, editor@ccbnet.org. Other members, Annette Carter, Susan Glass, Mike Keithley, Roger Peterson, Bonnie Rennie, Donna Sanchez, Dr. Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker.